Season 1, Episode 4 of Halt and Catch Fire, Close to the Metal.
That's great, but I didn't have the recorder on.
Oh. I just thought I'd get a jump on you this time.
Are you,
thank you a little, show you who's in charge, like Boz did to Joe in this episode.
This is 104 for High Plains Drifter. No, this is 104 for Halt and Catch Fire, Close to the Metal. We just did 103, High Plains Hardware. Michelle and Mike from West Coast Project. So, Michelle, Close to the Metal, did you like this episode?
Yeah, it was disturbing, though, didn't you think?
Disturbing?
Well, it was violent. And I think we saw the lengths that some people will go to in this kind of business stuff. And yeah, I mean, I thought it was really disturbing. I thought Joe was disturbing. I thought a lot of it was disturbing.
This was disturbing to me. And now we're getting close to the middle of the season, this 3, 4, 5 series of episodes where people started to think this show is a little bit goofy because they're doing drastic things again that are seemingly difficult to explain and maybe not the greatest plot moves in by the writers for this series. But it was interesting but a little bit hard to believe on some of this stuff. So here's the speed review. So Cameron's getting near the finishing up the code for the new PC, and she loses all of her data. And to magnify that, it happens right at a time that Joe's brought in a reporter from a big business magazine to write up a story about Cardiff. And the reporter sees all this messy chaos and just is kind of happy about being able to have witnessed it. Bosworth is in trouble because he may be losing control of the project to Joe, or at least he thinks he's losing the project to Joe. Gordon asks Donna for help in fixing the problem that they have with the memory and or the lost destroyed discs. And we find out that she's in trouble with her job at Texas Instruments. And she does solve the problem. She confronts Joe in the office because she sees him as having set up this problem on purpose. And what else? Joe gets pulled over by the police because Boz is getting even with him and has set up the police to beat him up for getting even with him. And then Boz goes to bail him out of jail and kind of gloats over it. And Joe's understands now that it was a message that Bosworth was saying, "Hey, I'm the man. You can't just walk in here and trample over me."
Well, yeah, Nathan pretty much made him do that.
You think Nathan made him do the police?
I don't think he made him do that specific, but Nathan told him he better get control and let.
Yeah, that was a very Bosworth thing to do, like rough, tough Texas guy thing to do. But I think it was a little bit more than what Bosworth would have really done.
Yeah, I don't know. I almost thought that's what Nathan was telling him to do.
That actual plan to get the police to rough him up?
I don't think he told him specifically, but I think he told him in general that he had to do what he had. Well, he did tell him. You have to do what you have to do to get control of this and let Joe know who's boss.
All right. I think we just said that twice. So, all right. So Joe, it starts out this episode, Close to the Metal, 104, June 22nd, 2014. Joe shows Boz around, and all the time he's showing him around the project, he's shutting all his minions up. You know, just I'm the one talking here. I don't need your input. To all these technicians. But the thing here is they've reached the Daugherty threshold, Michelle.
Yep.
Did you want to explain the Daugherty threshold to us?
The way I understood it was the Daugherty threshold is where the speed in which computers work goes from scene to scene or whatever. And if it's below a certain point, which is 400 milliseconds essentially, then it will keep people mesmerized and they'll stay and click longer. And if it's above that, even just by a, you know, nothing, it doesn't hold people's attention that long. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's the point in which the user of the computer puts input in, and then the results of that input appear on the screen. If that's too long, the user loses interest. And if it's short, it's not long, they stay interested. And that right. length of time is 400 milliseconds, so just about half a second. But they used – I looked this up on Wikipedia. They used to think it was 2 seconds that was the time. And these two scientists, Daugherty and Thadani, went and researched it and found that it's actually this 400 milliseconds. So the human being doing input has to produce a result in under 400 milliseconds to be addicting, to keep users attracted and using using the program, the software or the computer. If it's longer, they're going to lose interest. So they've reached this. They've got this input-output to happen in 400 milliseconds or 380, just under the Daugherty index, Daugherty threshold.
Yep.
All right, and so now Joe, if that's too technical for everybody, Joe does something simple. He simply throws the BIOS book into the old BIOS IBM book that he and Gordon back engineered into the garbage can and lights it on fire.
Yep, he burns it.
Cooking the books.
Yep.
And we get to our commercial break. Did you like that whole scene up to that point?
That was pretty exciting.
Was it heavy-handed? A guy lighting a garbage can full of paper in an office?
It was. I kept waiting on the sprinklers to go off because, I mean, come on, we had sprinklers in the 80s. But yeah, it was showmanship. That's all it was. That's all it was. He's a salesman, and he had been going through there trying to sell to everybody anyway, sell to his own team when they hit this Daugherty threshold. And his thing was, he was selling them, and he was trying to tell Boz that Boz fueling the money into this was working. So essentially he's trying to sell to Boz, and then this just helped. And
it's a pretty profound status improvement in their development, this Daugherty threshold. They even, like, Gordon even calls Donna, and she's impressed, and people that know what it is are pretty impressed with it.
Right.
And so it is pretty, it's like Joe's saying, we don't need IBM's BIOS anymore. We now have our own, and we've gotten better than IBM even at this, and I can just right. burn what took us forever, blood, sweat, and tears to get, just throw it away. It's burnt. We don't need it. We're moving past this.
And this is what Cameron did, and can we say the toll that it took on her? Did you see her in the beginning of this? She has, like, these dark circles under her eyes, actually, like, almost like red circles. She looks like a drug addict or something. It's like she's just been working nonstop or something to get this done and has succeeded.
Oh, I look like that every morning. So we do the commercial break and come back, and Donna and Gordon getting started in their morning. And this totally shows Donna in charge. She's getting the kids' lunches ready. She's getting breakfast ready. She's setting up the day. And all Gordon has to do is pick up the girls later, and he's going to blow that. But on his way out from work, he passes Brian, the guy he just fired, in the driveway, and he's just insanely standing in his front yard in his robe.
And his black socks.
With a hose or something, or just he just looked crazy.
He did.
And we'll see later on, he is a little crazy. So Joe shows up at the office, and we see Heavy Metal Cameron, like you just described her, and Donuts Debbie the secretary.
Yep.
And Joe wants Debbie to spruce up Cameron and take her home and get her to wear a bra, and she wouldn't listen to anybody but another female, so that's why I want you to help me out here. Take her to your place and put a bra on her. And I didn't realize this at the time, Michelle, but this was Joe's plot, his long game, to get Cameron away from her computer.
Yep. It sure was. And of course you wouldn't have known, but that's exactly what that was.
So he's selling Debbie, and Debbie seems somewhat oddly stupidly smart. Like, she's got this vacant look on her face, but she's like, oh, okay, I see where you're going with this. Like, I don't think she knew it was a plot to get Cameron away from her desk, but she just seems smarter than they make her look.
Well, she definitely thought it was an unusual request. I mean, have you ever had anybody ask you in your business setting to take somebody home and get them a shower? I mean, that's an odd thing.
But... yeah, but if you saw Cameron like you described her, the light would go on and you go, yeah, I could see that makes sense. We have a reporter coming in here.
Yeah.
And, you know, and this is our mastermind, and she looks like freaking Albert Einstein without a shower for 30 days. Anyway, I don't know. What did you think of Joe's plot overall, Michelle, knowing now what he was doing in this episode?
I just think he takes so many chances, and he just doesn't care the stress or what he does to anybody else. He takes so many chances for things that might go his way.
Well, what did you think of the plot? Not the risk of, not the results of the other people, but just the strategy of the plot.
Well, I mean, if it had not involved other people, then I think it was definitely worth a shot. It was a great idea. But I think the fact that he's willing to throw everybody and everything under the bus for a chance for something to work is telling.
Well, it's just don't like that about Joe. I think the plot was a pretty good idea, and actually, he's pretty right about that. There is no story unless there's something dramatic happening, or there's a lot more to a story if there's something dramatic happening. And the way he throws people under the bus isn't cool, but it's kind of ingenious the way that.
No, but he could have gotten other people on board with that. So the whole office isn't literally like taking years off their life with this. Can you imagine? I mean, just losing something in word. We've all done that, right? Or losing something that you've done, that you've worked on for a long, long time, or for even hours or whatever, not weeks and weeks. The way that feels to lose that kind of stuff, and he's got to know that. And
yeah, but she was only going to have to suffer through that for one day.
Yeah, but I thought for a minute she was going to jump off the side of the building.
Yeah, maybe. They made it look like that.
And this was not a guarantee of anything. This was for a shot of something working. Because who was to say, I mean, think of all the stars that had to align to get this to work like this. Gordon had to have gotten Donna. Donna had to have been able to get it working.
Well, not according to Joe's plan. Joe was going to solve the problem in his original plan. Donna just happened to show up.
I don't know. I don't know how he could have done that. He's not a programmer. And made it look normal, made it look doable. And the reporter would have had to have stayed. And Cameron would have had to have not backed anything up anywhere else. And, I mean, just everything had to align perfectly for this to work for Joe. And I'm not saying it's a horrible thing. Idea. I think the idea is good, but I think he could have let everybody in on it to put on a show in place of just steamrolling all over his own people.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he had to be more effective, he had to have people really upset and really couldn't let people in on it. It's funny, though, if you remember when you and I first started talking about this show, I couldn't even remember why the reporter was at Cardiff and why Joe had that guy come in. Remember that? I'm like, yeah. I don't remember. So I had to rewatch it. But it was, the plot we could shoot holes in, and I think I have some notes here on how I shoot some holes in it too. But, you know, it's just more Joe being like dramatically supermarket type guy. All right, so we see some more symbolism here. Boz and Nathan are at the horse ranch, this horse scene at the ranch. Kind of like the bird symbol, I think, this horse thing was. Nathan now knows about Lulu not funding, but he's curious because this is where he says, well, she can throw away a deal, but she's not returning my calls, and that's really weird. And he wants to know from Boz who's running things, and this pisses Boz off more than anything, this question, his authority getting questioned, I think.
Sure.
And then the horse gets shot. And so the horse, what do you think about the horse getting shot, Michelle? Do you have any symbolism for that?
Well, sure. I think Nathan was saying he'll, you know, do anything to protect. You know, it's like, I will kill this. I will kill what's going on to protect his retirement. That's what he was talking about. He doesn't want enough changes to go into effect his retirement. And who would? Just because Joe came in and strong-armed his way into doing all this.
But yeah, so the horse is either Bosworth, like I'll kill off Bos, he's telling him, to keep my retirement in place, or I'll just kill off Cardiff. I'll just shut it down and that's and sell it off or whatever.
Yep.
So it's one or the other. It's a symbol, though. It's pretty clearly a symbol. So they do this Wall Street Quarterly reporter publicity stunt, Joe does. And this reporter is a piece of work, Michelle. He walks around like he owns the place. I like Joe's plot, but I didn't like the execution of it. I didn't like this reporter at all.
No.
He's not going to walk around like he owns the place and getting his feet up on the desks. And he's only there as a favor to somebody else. And he agrees to stay for 15 minutes. And so we know he's going to leave unless something dramatic happens. So that kind of validates Joe's. Joe probably knew this coming in. But on their way to see Cameron, her PC melts down and the hard drive gets erased and the backups are compromised and they blame it on the vacuum cleaner. And then the backups are too close to the speakers that she's always blasting and they get degaussed or erased. And the reporter sees all this and now he has some thoughts about, whoa, maybe there is something worth staying around here for. And that's it. That's the first commercial break.
And Cameron's just whimpering and whimpering.
Cameron's a victim. She's definitely thrown under the bus here by Joe to get this drama to unfold.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're all victims, though. Donna's a victim. Look at what he does to Donna. I mean, Donna couldn't even go back to work. She had this special thing she was supposed to be doing that day, and Gordon was supposed to pick up the kids. Gordon couldn't take the kids. Donna couldn't go back to her job. He just screwed up everything.
Well, Donna, okay, so Gordon, to come back from the commercial, Gordon goes to pick up the kids, but he's late for one thing. It looks like the school's all ready to close down. And he apologizes for that, but he can't even leave with the kids. he's apologizing, but he's just going to get Donna and the kids to come back with him. So he wipes out their whole plans for everything and Donna's work plans and just says to Donna, the stakes are higher in my world than they are in your world. Which is pretty insulting to Donna.
And it might be true, but I don't know.
So Joe's fake out continues back at the company. The writer says, I wasn't going to write a word about your company, you know, but now it's interesting. You're flying too close to the sun and you're getting burnt to a crisp, and I love it. And he's all ready to write that up.
Yeah.
And Joe kind of fake throws him out. I have to ask you to leave. Cardiff Engineers are the best, and we'll figure this out. It's pretty good acting by Lee Pace and Joe in the show, I think, just to make this writer believe that this really is a real problem, and we don't want you to see it.
It made me believe it as I was watching it. Didn't you think they honestly lost the code?
Yeah, at the time it was really mysterious, but in retrospect it looks pretty clear. Joe's right. Plan is pretty right. Clear. And so Gordon shows up with Donna, and Joe doesn't want Donna there. He's very acrimonious to her. But in Michelle, in the light of his grand plan here, why would Joe let her stay? Why would Joe interrupt his original plan and let her stay?
That's a good point. I don't know.
Because she could mess this up, as she essentially does find out that it was a plot. But along the way, we see Cameron with her magic doll, this doll that, I don't know, do we see in episodes 1, 2, or 3 the meaning of this doll? Did she explain that? How her father gave her the doll and gave it life, and it was more than just a rag doll, it was like a magic doll because he gave it personality?
I don't remember that at all. So I don't think we've seen that yet.
Yeah, that happens later in the series somewhere, and it was a really kind of important point.
Yeah, I haven't watched all of season 1 for the second time even again, so it has to be later in season 1, because I don't remember that at all.
Yeah. So Donna's trying to investigate this problem, and Cameron, the writers made Cameron a little heavy-handed lead into this total bitch. Like, who the fuck are you? Are you even close to the metal? And of course, close to the metal, meaning the creator of the hardware. Do you know what we're even talking about here? Pretty insulting to Donna.
Mm-hmm. But Donna, she holds her own.
Yeah, Donna fights back. So, like, I graduated from Berkeley with honors. I run my own department, and I had started my own computer company before. And Cameron just says, go to hell, and or leaves out to go to the roof, to maybe jump off the roof. She's pretty despondent, but I don't know if I ever thought she was going to jump off that roof.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I thought that or not. I don't think I... They certainly didn't let it go long enough to really give us any, you know, fear over it or whatever. But the point, I think, being is that Joe would do something even to that extreme.
All she needed really was a sandwich. And Joe's going to bring her a sandwich pretty soon.
Well, you know, blood sugar really will make you kind of cranky.
So we come back. There was a commercial there. We come back. Donna's working on the melted hard drives. She's going to recover that drive. And the engineers are kind of watching her. What are you going to do? One spin at a time? And she's like, yeah, that's what we're going to do. She's smarter than you are, which is a pretty nice compliment to Donna by the other technicians. They say she's smarter than you are to Gordon.
Yep.
And she is, essentially, I think.
Yes, she is. In a different way, but yeah, for sure.
So Joe brings Cameron the sandwich up on the roof, but still lets her suffer through the plan. Doesn't tell her that, hey, this is working, just go along with it. He just lets her still suffer.
Yep.
So I guess here I put in my notes, what actually was his plan? If Donna hadn't shown up, what would he have done to make this plan work? He couldn't just plug in. It's like, oh, I've got the discs. Never mind. Here they are. That's not really creative. That doesn't make them look super engineering capable to this
writer.
No,
he would have had to have went in there and put the disc in and reestablished the code on the computer and then just said he was able to find it, you know, on the computer somewhere or something, that it was backed up somewhere.
Yeah.
On the computer.
So dramatic problem, dramatic solution, writer's impressed, and that's the plan.
Right.
All right, so while Donna's working on this, Cameron has to watch the girls.
She volunteers to.
First of all, okay, so here's another hole I'll shoot in this. Why is Cameron so helpless that she can't do anything but stand up on the roof and sit around on the pallets, and she can't offer any assistance at all? She's the creator of all the software. All she can do is babysit?
Yeah, I don't understand why she couldn't have been the one to find the software on the computer, right?
I guess because she's a software coder, and the problem is a mechanical, technical, it's hardware problems. Software is what her expertise is.
Okay.
So,
but still, she could do something more than...
Yeah, you would think, other than sit around and pout on the pallets.
I mean, if nothing else, just clean up around your desk or something.
So Donna does get the file allocation tables to work one step at a time, like one half turn of the hard drive at a time. And Gordon watches her, and he's just kind of fascinated by it. And he reminisces about their old days. And this is where the scene comes up pretty soon where they kind of get turned on by this. It's appealing to both of them to remember their old romantic days when they probably did this all night together.
Sure.
But then the girls reveal to Cameron, you're not trash, you're fun. Daddy said that you were white trash. And this is where Cameron gets totally overly evil. She's got this, mouth freshener, tickle spray, she calls it, and starts lighting it on fire in front of them like a blowtorch.
Yeah.
Tells them to get the hell out of here. Playtime's over. Pretty over the top, don't you think?
Yeah, for little kids, absolutely over the top.
She gets no benefit from scaring these kids.
She didn't care. She's just going to act how she's going to act and do what she's going to do.
Yeah, and she gets their home address from Donna's wallet and goes to firebomb the place or do something. She doesn't even know what. She opens the garage and starts looking for, axes and mallets and
something, yeah.
Gasoline.
Yeah.
And it turns out she finds some spray paint. It looks like she's going to tag their living room wall. Way too heavy-handed, though. It made Cameron too hateable. Cameron can't be lovable and smart and hateable and evil all in one package. And then she crosses paths with Brian, the crazy neighbor who got fired, with his shotgun.
Yeah.
Well, then what the hell was he going to do with a shotgun?
Yeah, I mean, was he coming in there to hurt them? Because, I mean, Donna's car was home. You have to remember that. Donna's car was home. So, was Brian... That it wasn't like there was a strange car, and so he came in to find out who was in their home in a protective way. This was Donna's car, Donna and Gordon's car, whoever it was.
No, it was two evildoers crossing paths and kind of having a common enemy. It wasn't like Brian was
protecting. But with
protecting.
A shotgun?
Yeah, that was over the top.
He was coming in there with a shotgun? Who's going to kill him?
And she with her spray can. I don't know. That was over the top. That was kind of crazy. So the reporter's still at Cardiff, and now he's talking to Boz, and he rails against Bosworth for letting this IBM slickster come in, Joe, of course, he's talking about. And Boz defends himself, but too viciously, I think. Just like in the last episode, we said the characters now have some direction, but they start to use those directions, I think, too heavy-handedly. Like, we know Joe is super creative to any point. He'll throw anybody under the bus to get his marketing and his brilliant ideas across. Cameron's the crazy streetwise coder that will go spray paint somebody's living room because they call her white trash. And Bosworth's going to have guys beat up because they insult him. And I don't know. It just seemed too heavy-handed to me.
Okay, I completely, let me just say this, believe the Boz thing. And it was actually really reminiscent of what we just podcast in True Detective with Frank. Remember how he had the police or had the guy stopped and then beat up?
Yeah, but Frank's a criminal. Bosworth's a manager of a corporation.
Yeah, but Bosworth is protective over he's a good old boy kind of Texan and protective over his job, and I didn't think that was unbelievable.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
They even make Gordon more hateable, too, because the reporter asks, the reporter sees Donna save the day and asks her name, and Gordon says Susan Fairchild, one of Cardiff's debuggers. Doesn't even give the right name. It's her mother-in-law's maiden name.
Yeah, that's her mother's name.
Yeah, her mother's maiden name, right.
Right, right.
And lies about her title and then tells the reporter his real name. Like, I'm Gordon, put my name down.
Right.
He grabs credit. I don't know, that was like heavy-handed for about Gordon. And then this is where Donna starts to uncover Joe's plot. She sees the fake labels on the discs, and she realizes that there's a vacuum cleaner in the room in the basement with a cement floor. That nobody would vacuum a cement floor.
Right.
I vacuum a cement floor, though. I vacuum a wood floor.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of do, too, but yeah, I don't know.
So we see that this has been a long game by Joe. This is where, if you're paying really close attention, that it's a long game, that writing something, anything, is a plus by having a reporter visit than just having them come and give a cursory, all right, see you later, 10-minute hit-and-run visit.
Right.
So that was his plan. Now, Donna could have revealed this to the reporter at this point.
No, the reporter was gone, I think. I mean, she could have obviously gotten in contact with him. But I think even Donna knew to reveal that to that reporter would have really been throwing Gordon under the bus. And there is no such thing as bad publicity. And either way it would have turned out, it would have been publicity for the company. And even though I think Donna really despised how it went about, she wasn't going to derail it at that point. And
well,
I think that says
Joe feels the need to convince her of this and tells her, don't tell the reporter, but don't even tell Gordon.
Yeah.
Don't even tell Gordon that this was all a plot. But everybody goes home. Or on the way home, Donna accuses Cameron of scaring the girls, and Cameron tries to apologize. So Cameron's broken at this point. She kind of realizes, wait a minute, I almost like vandalized somebody's house. What the hell am I doing? It seems like Cameron's turned a corner.
Well, and she also realizes that Donna, or she thinks anyway, that Donna just saved her. Donna just got this code back. And Donna tells her, hey, we found, because Cameron doesn't even talk to her until she finds out that she's gotten the code back. Donna's like, hey, we got your code back. And then she's like, oh my gosh, you know, and she's very, very grateful. I think.
Donna also now realizes how brilliant Cameron is.
Yes,
she says, your code is music, and that's a huge compliment. If you remember, Donna's currency is music. It's, you know, the symphonic computer, and she's like a piano master from...
Oh, yeah.
Her, so saying that something is music is a huge compliment coming from Donna.
Yep.
All right, then the Joe goes home, and this is where the cops stop him and beat him up per Boz's instructions. And now Donna does tell Gordon about Joe's plan and plot and everything that just happened. And Gordon just asks, did it work? Which, by the way, it's pretty cold-blooded of Gordon to just ask if it worked. But that really is the real question.
And he didn't just ask if it worked. He's like, no, and he's all upset over it. And then he stops and kind of collects himself, and then he says, but did it work? And I think he's almost impressed with Joe, and Donna is beyond disgusted.
Well, this is corners being turned, because, like, Cameron's broken into a new direction. Donna's complimenting Cameron. Gordon is almost complimenting Joe by, like, wow, did it actually work? That's kind of a compliment.
Yeah.
Like, did this really work? It's kind of brilliant. And next we see Boz picking up Joe at the police department, and he's beat to hell. He's got a busted up chest and arm, and his face is bloody, and his shirt's ripped and dirty. And Donna next gets in trouble by Hunt for missing time at the office. And Michelle, where do you think Hunt's? We know more about Hunt since watching season one, and we know about his long game. Do you think his long game scheme was in play at this early stage?
I don't think so. I think he's just as innocent as they come in this. What do you think? You think something different?
Do you think Hunt was interested in Donna, like, as a romantic kind of sexual conquest? Like,
you know,
boss over a subordinate?
I think he looks at her that way. I think once you look at somebody that way ever in your life, we found out that they went to high school together. And he probably looked at her that way in high school from the way they're talking. And I think once you look at somebody that way, it's hard to ever look at them a different way, maybe. But I don't think he has any ulterior motive in this.
So do you think in high school, do you think Hunt was like the nice guy in class and Donna was the cheerleader, everybody loves pretty girl, that Donna was out of Hunt's league in high school?
I don't think so. No, I mean, I didn't see.
Do you think Hunt was out of Donna's league in high school?
I don't think so. I think it was just, I think Donna was probably a computer nerd in high school, and Hunt was probably, I don't know what, a jock or something, you kind of get the impression of. But I just think it just didn't happen. Or maybe it did happen in high school. We don't know that it didn't, do we?
No, but it's more interesting to me that Donna's the pretty cheerleader, popular girl, and Hunt's just average guy, and now Hunt's the boss of the pretty cheerleader girl.
Maybe.
They don't tell us that, but that's left open for us to figure out.
Yeah, and you might be right, because it definitely does have an air to that, because he almost seems deferential to her as far as he can, as far as not just kind, but overly kind, and kind of wants to impress her and everything. So
Her with his authority. And I mean, later on when he has this chance, when I first saw him asking her to travel to another city with him, I thought he had plans to put the moves on her.
Yep.
But it turns out he wasn't. And I'm still trying to figure out where his long game starts, because you might say it started on that trip later on in one of these subsequent episodes, because he doesn't sleep with her. He doesn't. And in fact, he turns her down at the doorway. But I don't know. That's kind of a mysterious little relationship between Hunt and Donna. And then he ends up showing up at their house like he's attracted to her. That's what makes me think she was the pretty girl and he was the average guy. That she was out of his league. I don't know.
I don't either.
Okay, so Joe shows up at the office after the police department the next morning and just says, I fell down. Which is the most stupid excuse ever, right, for getting in a fight, or the beaten housewife is like, I slipped, but your whole face is beat up and you're limping. And
I think that's code. I think that's code for something happened and I'm not going to tell you.
Okay. Is that what you use?
That's what I... No, no.
All right, I don't want to reveal too much about your personal life.
Okay.
All right, so Gordon gives...
Oh, my God.
Sorry, of course, that's all fake. Gordon gives... Gordon gives Joe the chance to tell the truth because he knows the truth now. Gordon knows the truth from Donna, and Joe just says Donna saved us. He doesn't right. open up to Gordon.
Right.
Cameron is at work again, and she's coding and backing up. Looks like every step along the way, and she holds the disc like a little baby bird. She just mm-hmm. so careful with it. But Michelle, did you notice she still has cans of orange soda on top of her computer?
Well,
like on an angle.
Yeah.
Like two cans of soda on top of the monitor.
Yep.
And the monitor in those days was the computer, so if they spill, they're going right into the computer. So she hasn't learned her lesson.
No, but she's learned something. She is educable, right?
Educable?
Is that not the right word?
Educatable?
I thought it was educable. I don't know.
I don't think I've ever heard the word educable.
Okay. Maybe. Well, you never know. That could just be a Michelle word. Michelle.
All right. That's it for 104, though, close to the metal, just like the orange juice is close to the metal. So, Michelle, how do people reach you on the internet?
Tweet me, at Michelle from TN.
And you'll educable them about your
Don't make
opinions.
Fun of me.
All right, mine's at Skating Tweets. And that's it for 104, close to the metal on Halt and Catch Fire. Next week is 105 Adventure.
Yay.
Cool.